Talking Games Podcast.
Welcome back, this is episode 116 of the Talking Games Podcast, me, host the Major. It is Sunday, the 8th of October. Hope you've all had a really good week. Thank you everyone for joining us. We were at WAS, and I want to say thank you to everyone who come up and say hello to us. Last month, we will be at EGX next Saturday, all day, me, Shinobi, and Christina. So if you are a developer and you're going to be at EGX, drop us a message. You can know the usual socials. It's all the email address is on our socials, or you can contact us via the website if you want us to come check out one of your games. You can also send us an email to talkinggamespodcast@outlook.com. If you want to drop something for the podcast, we will be doing full coverage next week after EGX. So there won't be a regular episode, there'll be more coverage of EGX next week. I believe it's going to be me and Shinobi. We're going to be talking about all the stuff we've seen and the games that we saw. It's going to be an interesting couple of days during EGX. There is a couple of reveals coming as well. We're going to be getting hands-on with Call of Duty, the new one, Modern Warfare 3. I know Callum's already got it because he wanted to go, but we'll see. Anyway, I want to thank you all for joining us. Don't forget to check out the website, gamesinquirer.com. You can find us on all socials, /gamesinquirer everywhere. Those on the YouTube channel, I am trying to get more videos up very, very soon. We are doing, obviously, EGX coverage, but we are still waiting for a callback from Bandai about the video we had to take down. Some people asked where it went. Bandai wanted to go through it, and it has to go to the Team Japan. So I don't know what the hell is going on there. That video has been down for the last 2 weeks. We've privated it until they to respond and say everything's okay. We have still haven't heard anything. So if I don't need anything by next week, I'm just going to repost it anyway because it's taking a bit of the mick. But we thank the guys for being here. We've got Bam, Nightmare, and surprisingly Alex, who hasn't done a podcast episode in, what, nearly 6 months, I think.
Absolute months.
Yes, it has been a while. How you guys been?
Good.
You got to give me more than that, though.
Good. Yeah, I've been
big one,
thank you, yeah. How about yourself?
Not too bad. I had a bit of an illness over the last week. We've got flu going around at the moment. I'll call that for a few days. But other than that, I've just been playing games, mate. I've just been playing a ton of games. There is so much I'm currently reviewing. Thankfully, you and Shinobi have taken two off my hands, so at least I'm less than what I was, like, a week ago, which is great. I am dropping my EAFC review this week. I'm trying to get up by tomorrow at the latest. I've also got Assassin's Creed Mirage. Thank you very much to Ubisoft for sending that to me. And what else have I got? I know you've just taken over Lies of P. I have tried a little bit of it, but I can't get into it, and I know I need to get it done before I can do a review, so thank you very much to you. Shinobi's doing Forza Motorsport when that drops, because we didn't get a code from Xbox, unfortunately. We did reply, but they didn't respond to us. And I think there's another two. I've still got to finish my Lords of the Fallen preview. So I've played the preview of that. It's fantastic, by the way, if you haven't already played that. The demo, I believe there's a demo out there somewhere. And I think that's it. I think I've got three or four left. My Phantom Liberty review dropped last week. I want to thank the nearly 1,000 people that clicked on that. Very, very good. Very good response for that review. And a lot of people said the same thing, because the next Cyberpunk game is going to include third person, which was one of my criticisms. I didn't want it in first person. I felt personally, as an RPG, it should be in third, because you can't, what's the point of making a character? You can't see them unless you go look for a mirror. But yeah, it's a very, very good game. I really did enjoy the DLC. Bam, how you been, dude?
I've been good, man. I've been playing a lot of video games, as per usual. Still dealing with this, with the newborn, working, basically, just life, just trying to be an adult. And a kid at the same time,
Yeah. Well, my son's now 9, and he's getting to be a teenager already, so I know I miss having babies, to be honest with you. I miss having babies.
I want to skip this newborn stage and jump directly into the toddler stage, because babies are just so, all they do is sleep, eat, shit, and cry.
Yeah. Although although they are quite funny when they're little, because my son used to do the rock eyebrow. When he drink milk, he'd pull up the eyebrow. I've got a picture of it on my phone, actually. I'll send that to you soon. but he just looked ridiculous. And then, like, he used to, I don't know why, but he'd do, like, martial arts poses and stuff. And I'm like, oh, it's freaking hilarious. But then that age, they're brilliant. When they started to get into 3, 4, 5, they
become... I can't wait to start gaming with them.
Oh, no, I've been playing games with Benny since he was 2.
Oh, yeah, me too, same.
Yeah. He's that's why he's now on Fortnite screaming at the screen. He got a pump shotgun. But what you guys been playing? Because I've already said what I've been playing. Assassin's Mirage, by the way, is very good. I will say that. I know some people have been slamming it this week since it dropped on Friday. We got our code the day before, which is why we didn't get our code up, our review up soon enough. But what you guys been playing?
Are we going to be talking about AC Mirage today? Is that a topic?
Not that I believe so. I just wanted to give my two thoughts on it. Two cents.
Okay, but I've been playing nothing really, man. I've just been on that Baldur's Gate because somebody made a bet with me about Baldur's Gate. Because I was just asking about, you know, how come I seen more people who was capping for Starfield actually came out and they beat Starfield, but the people I seen capping for Baldur's Gate, I haven't seen anybody complete their game yet. That game's been out for like over a month. So I was like, I feel like y'all was just capping for the game, you know what I'm saying? Just for console war, you know, BS. And the dude was like, well, you can't beat it either. And I was like, what? So I'm about to beat this game for like $200. So I've been on nothing but Baldur's Gate 3.
Bloody hell, you're getting paid $200 just to play a video game?
$200 just to play a video game. Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, I'm in the wrong profession, I think.
Hey man, you gotta go in there
$200 just to play games. I've been
fucking. What you gotta do, Major? You gotta go in there and you gotta bait some console warriors. play some games.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Starfield is impossible to beat. You could beat the main story, but as far as all like the side quests and stuff, that game is and finding everything and scaling every planet, it's gonna take you years to get through all of that.
I've been playing now for a good solid month,
and I'm not even, like, a tenth of the way through.
Have you not finished the main campaign once yet?
I finished the main campaign twice.
Okay, I was about to say, because I've seen a couple people on their app. They got the 1,000 out of 1,000 gamer score, too. They got all the achievements unlocked.
Yeah, I mean, there's also 10 playthroughs you have to do to get everything. It's 10 new game pluses.
Yeah, forget that. Yeah.
There's a lot to do, and I'm not the one to just jump straight in and do the main quest. I do all the faction quests, I do all the side quests, I find every single thing that I can. I'm about 600-700 hours in, and I'm still playing. I love that game. I love it so much I cannot put it down, but I will agree, there's nobody's completely bald. I haven't seen a single person 100% Baldur's Gate yet. Nobody's gone out and said, oh, I've got everything in Baldur's Gate. I haven't seen it. So if you do it, you might well be the first, dude.
I'm not even talking about 100%. I'm just talking about, you know, you go in, you do some side quests because I'm not about to do everything and anything inside that game. That's not how I play my video games. But I'm talking about I haven't seen anybody. Like, I haven't seen nobody say, oh, man, I rolled credits on this, and I beat this, and I enjoyed this about the game. But then again, I don't really follow like a lot of PC guys, and that's really a PC game. Really, it's not really a console type of game.
Yeah, I've been hearing Baldur's Gate 3 is gonna be dropping on Xbox around December. So it's gonna be like one of the last games released in this year. We know the Xbox Series version is coming because they've removed split screen co-op from the S version. As far as where it is right now, end of November, beginning of December, release for the Xbox version. I don't think we've done a review. I don't think we did. I will be trying to get it on Xbox because my PC is not capable of running Baldur's Gate 3, I can tell you that off the bat. And I don't know about PlayStation, unless Callum or Shinobi or Adam does one of them. We'll see. As far as that, though, we've got to talk about the news because there is a lot of PlayStation stuff this week. I know we missed last week. We missed the big Jim Ryan retires news. But there is a ton of news coming out of PlayStation. The first one was Bungie is getting sued for racism. We did have a contact at Bungie previously. He's now working elsewhere. Who's now working for another studio. But he did reach out to us about a week ago when the Bungie stuff started coming out. And we were talking basically about PlayStation. And when this Bungie news dropped about this lawsuit that's just been filed, he made some comments to me which I found shocking, quite frankly, because I don't think I've ever heard of a studio this bad. But I will get into that in just a minute. I have reached out to Sony Interactive's head of communications, their VP. She has not responded to us yet. So I'm hoping next week I'll try reaching out one more time. If they don't, then I'm going to run the article. Because I've given them my ample opportunity to respond and to try and quell some of the stuff that's been said about what life is like at Bungie as a developer if you're an ethnic minority. But I will, I'm not going to talk about too much of it. I did give a brief hint in our article we posted about HR manager Adam posted this for me. But we did go into a bit of detail. I did add a little bit on the end about what has been done. But Bungie is basically being sued by one of their former HR managers, Ingrid Alm. The suit is involving allegations of racism in the workplace. The HR manager is claiming that they were wrongfully dismissed after they spoke up for a black employee. She's suing the Destiny Studio for apparently racial discrimination. The fact that she was released for trying to help a black employee to deal with the racist abuse he was receiving. She was investigating the performance of this employee originally, a few months into joining the company, who's named in the lawsuit as James Smith. He said he was the only black employee in a team of 50 and thus felt singled out by his supervisor because of his race. And then spoke to the supervisor and recommended that they and the other team members take diversity training. This was rejected by the supervisor because they claimed that the employees, the white employees on this team, had been there a long time and were highly regarded in the company. Alm then claims that Bungie management contacted us and recommended that Smith be terminated, which Alm disagreed with, citing this would be racial discrimination. It would be wrongful dismissal and illegal. Let's not forget that you can't dismiss somebody because of their race. That is illegal. Not long after, Alm spoke with Bungie's Director of Equity and Inclusion, Dr. Courtney Benjamin, who suggested that Smith take a written warning instead, despite not doing anything wrong at all. He hadn't done anything. But as releasing him from his contract would be too risky considering the evidence. What evidence? That he's been abused? Okay. Alm claims her supervisor issued Alm a written warning for speaking with Benjamin, claiming they were extremely angry, and then contacted Benjamin to apologise for Alm speaking with her. Alm was then placed in a needs improvement category during a work performance review, with the supervisor apparently suggesting she looked for a way to lead the company on her own. Alm then says her email and work platform access was severed, and despite not resigning, was told her resignation was successful, was accepted. Bungie has denied Alm's version, although hasn't provided any context or timeline. Bungie also has a history of toxic work culture, racism and gender bias. They've claimed that on their social media, if you go look at their Twitter channels, they're saying that we're very inclusive, we're one of the best places to work in the industry. All of our employees are happy, but then you look at what's being said behind the scenes, and that is technically a lie. Following the news emerging of the lawsuit, further allegations have been made. One of our sources, who's calling himself Richard, because he doesn't want his name out there, he doesn't want to be known as somebody who speaks out, which is fair enough. He claims to now work for a Sony-affiliated third party. The source has made several allegations against the company, including management dismissing complaints when white team members frequently use racist slurs towards black team members in the office. This is obviously involving use of the N-word and other terms. He didn't go into specifics. However, this is something that apparently happens. There's also cases of racist bullying in Bungie's office as well, as far as he knows from when he was there, from what he's experienced and seen firsthand. As far as what we know from PlayStation, we have reached out to PlayStation to ask a comment, to try and dispel, or see if they're going to do an investigation. Anything being done at all, they have not responded to us. I did send a direct email to their head of VP of communications, and I have tried to speak to their head of HR. They've received my emails, I've left voicemails, and neither of them have replied. So as far as where that's going, I don't know. If they are going to do an investigation into this, I have no idea whether they're aware. I don't know. But there is going to be some more news coming out of this eventually, because I have got other things that have been reported to me about what life is like at Bungie. And let's just say if these allegations are true, because I'm not going to say 100% they are just yet without evidence, then it would scream to me that Bungie as a workplace is worse than Activision Blizzard was or is.
What?
Yeah.
Seems so like I've
jumped in.
I know. Seems like I've jumped in at just about the right time.
Yeah. Did you hear any of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as far as what I've heard, and if these allegations are accurate, Bungie is worse than Activision Blizzard. Not for
and
the R-A-T-E word, but for the fact
of
abuse.
Yeah. We all know what my opinion on Activision is, so...
Yes. Well, what we're talking mainly about Bungie, in their case, is allegations of harassment and racist abuse. Apparently, the workplace from a couple of years ago was extremely toxic, and allegations have also been made that they're particularly singling out of members of BAME, or Black and Ethnic Minorities. And this, if the allegations are true, and we will learn more over the next couple of weeks, we will write articles about this if we hear any more and get some actual responses. If not, though, then yeah, take that with the moment as reported source. Anyway, Sony also has had a number of dramatic changes this week. Jim Ryan has stepped down, and they've been hacked twice, PlayStation. Do not worry, this does not involve any game information. There was no game leaks, there was no screenshots of any games, not like the Xbox stuff. We didn't get timelines from Sony or PlayStation for the next 5 years. That hasn't happened. The most we've got is data breaches and personal information of staff members. 7,000 staff members had their personal info leaked.
I mean, that's still
current
not great.
And former. Say again?
I said, that's still not great.
It's like... not. It's bloody terrible. I mean, if you're a leaver company, you'd hope they would delete your personal information for starters, but apparently Sony's just keeping hold of...
I don't think there are a lot... I'm pretty sure there's a law where you have to keep hold of it for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pain. I mean, some of this is coming from Japan, though. It's his Sony Group. Not Sony Interactive. It's Sony Group as a whole, which is based in Japan.
And they don't necessarily have the same laws we do in terms of data.
No.
Alright, fair enough.
Sony Interactive has confirmed that last month's ransomware attack, including personal information of 6,800 Sony Group employees, Sony has been contacting those affected to let them know what happened. According to PlayStation, the breach occurred via the MoveIt file transfer site, which is used largely by Sony Interactive employees to communicate. The software is made by Progress Software, which was announced earlier this year in May that a vulnerability was already discovered in the software prior to 3 days after a hacker accessed and downloaded all files, obtaining 6,791 personal details of current and former employees in the US. In a letter from Sony to its current employees and former employees, they said they discovered unauthorized downloads, immediately took the platform offline and remediated the vulnerability. The investigation was then launched with assistance from external cybersecurity experts who have notified also law enforcement. Those have been affected are being offered free credit monitoring and identity restoration services. But there is no game information, no timelines. If anybody, because I have seen this coming out on Twitter and Reddit, etc. for the last couple of days, none of the information that was leaked includes any game information. So anybody posting fake screenshots of games or claiming they have information on games from the leaks or saying that any of the files contain any... Oh, this, you know, the next God of War's confirmed is absolute trash. It's nonsense. Don't believe it. It's not true. There is no game leaks. All right. It's personal information to staff members. Granted, that's bad, and they need to get that information removed because there is account information and people's email addresses and birthdays and everything on there. That's terrible. Get rid of that. But I will say that there is no game information, there is no game schedule, there is no roadmap, no news about games, nothing. There is no console information, there is nothing about Sony Interactive's products at all. Nothing.
Although that tells you something about Sony, in that they seem to care more about making sure their game information is kept safe.
Yeah, but they don't have any games.
Well, yeah.
I wouldn't even make that assumption. The people that hacked their company specifically must have only went after the employee's information. Because Sony's already been hacked before.
Yeah, twice. At least twice this year.
If the people wanted to get video game information, then that's what they would have went
they
after. I wouldn't make the assumption to say that Sony cares more about video games than they do about their own employees.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, I will say there is no game information, though, so all those supposed leaks, fake, right? This obviously has not been a good week, because obviously Jim Ryan stepped down, and it's going to be my question this week, because I have heard people, Sony PlayStation fans have been saying that Jim Ryan has been really successful over 30 years running this company. No, he's only been head of Sony and PlayStation for about 4 years. He started in the end of 2019, and he'll be leaving in March of next year. Regardless, well, I don't know what he's doing. He says he's retiring. I don't think that's the case. I think he's moving on. But there has also been some rumours that he's kind of being forced out because of the Activision Blizzard Microsoft acquisition, because that is kind of a death knell for him, and he's out the door now. But my question is, what is his legacy? What is exactly Jim Ryan achieved in his time as head of Sony Interactive? Because if you look at what he's happened underneath his leadership, you've had the PS5 launch, which was great. That's probably his biggest highlight. But then you've also got PlayStation Portal, PSVR 2, which technically has been a flop. The launch of the upgrade for PS Plus, which, according to their latest sales figures, and from what the fan backlash from when they announced their price increase is absolutely zero value, that hasn't gone very well. What exactly has been Jim Ryan's legacy? What is going to be the thing he is remembered for, other than trying to fight Microsoft in court in a losing battle to acquire Activision Blizzard?
I think it really depends on how well this PS5 does, because if this PS5 does better than the PS4, then that's all anybody's going to care about. Nobody's going to care about Activision leaving, or not even leaving, being purchased. Nobody's going to care about PSVR 2 being a flop, because the PSVR 1 was a flop, but people still praise and hail Sean Layden as being the best person. So really just got to wait to see what goes on with this generation, what games continue to come out from this generation. Right now it's looking like a whole bunch of remasters and BS, but never know.
Yeah, games as a service as well. There is a lot of them, and that is the other argument this week, which has really pissed me off. People were saying that live service games, like I can't remember the guy's name, but I was having an argument with somebody this week about live service games, because PlayStation is investing so heavily in games as a service that they're saying, oh, that single player, they need to get back to that. Let's be honest here, okay? PlayStation does not have the budget of Microsoft, alright? So saying they need to get something like Minecraft or Forza is stupid. That's not going to happen. They don't have the money for that. Live service games cost a lot of money. A lot of money. They're more expensive than single player games by like 3 times as much, because you have to pay for continued use of services, servers, maintenance, the game, and you need to constantly update, so you're having people constantly working on it. 10% may spend money on a game as a service, because games as a service are usually free to play. Out of every live service game that is released over the course of a year, maybe 2 or 3 will actually stick around. The majority of live service games flop within 12 months. And all you've got to do is look back at the last 2 years to see how many live service games were released and how many live service games are still around. Jaeger's Cycle Frontier, that game is around for 2 years, it's gone. Babylon's Fall, Chocobo GP, gone. What was the other one Square Enix had that was live service? Marvel Avengers. Dead. Alright? It's still around, but it's dead. Alright? This game is not, is like, have got like 2 people playing it. Nobody's spending money on it. Live service games do not stick around for very long. There is a ton of live service indie games. 99% of them don't succeed. They don't even last a month, because they just don't have any people playing them. Nobody's putting money into it. Therefore, there's no updates and the game's gone. Is this constant live service games do not sell well. So PlayStation investing in 15 live service games, which people would say is going to be Jim Ryan's legacy, all these 15 games. out of all 15 games, two or three are going to last. Right, you may have Marathon, because that's being made by Bungie. Phone Stars by Square Enix, I don't see that lasting very long, because that is technically just a rip-off of Splatoon. What's the other one? Helldivers 2, possibly, although being that it's just on PlayStation, that sort of game really does need multi-cross-platform. It's not even, so I don't think it's even launching the same day on PC. So, you've got maybe two or three there that are going to last past the year. The other 15, or the other 12 games, are not. They're going to be dead before the end of next summer. So, live service games is not the right legacy. You do not want to be attributing that to Jim Ryan as something big, be-all and end-all, because in a year's time, those games are going to be gone. Live service games do not sell well. They never have done. They never will do. Nobody wants to play live service games over and over and over again. Yeah, they may try it out for a month. Eventually, they'll get bored and move on to something else, because the next big single-player game will release.
Yeah, but all they need, again, you even said it, all they need is two or three live service games out of those 15 to hit. And then you said live service games don't play that much. Live service games are some of the most played games right
now. Yeah, but that's rare, though, dude. I mean, you've got Minecraft, Call of Duty, Counter-Strike. Those are the exceptions.
Those are the exceptions, but it can happen, which that is what they're hoping for. That's the reason why they got 15 coming down the pipeline. Also, live service games do not cost as much to make as single player games.
They don't cost as much to make, but in the long term, they cost more to run.
Yes, but in the long run. But if they put out 15 live service games and they all only have five people concurrent players after the first 4 or 5 months, they're going to shut those games down. Nobody in their right mind will keep servers up. But that's why I said, matter of fact, there's an interview to where Jim Ryan even says, we know all these games aren't going to be, like they all aren't going to take off, because at that point you're competing with games like Fortnite. You're competing with Overwatch. You're competing with other live service games. And the odds of you getting people to get off Call of Duty, which is what they spend all their time playing, or get people to get off Fortnite, which is what they invest all their time playing, chances of that are slim to none. But again, all you need to take off is two or three live service games. And then at that point, then you got something that's going to continue making money and it's going to continue bringing in revenue for you. And that's what they're hoping for.
I mean, the issue with that, though, is when you look at their live service games they are producing, they're all PS5 exclusive.
That's what we know right now, but if some of them games end up going to PC, which is looking like some of those games are going to be going on PC, they don't have to be on Xbox and Nintendo Switch to be successful.
It depends on the specs, though, because they're on PC and they are too high spec for PC, not everybody is going to be able to play it on PC. Because the PC, like, the majority of PC players are on mid-level tech.
I think
last count it was something like 18% of PC gamers actually have a PC, like, high-end unit.
Yes, but the thing about PC games and making games for PC, people on PC can make them games run at low settings to minimum settings, and they can still play the games. This isn't a single-player game to when they put out a game and go, okay, now these are the specs that are required for you to play this game. Most multiplayer games, they cater those games, or else they make those games run on the lowest spec possible. You don't see people coming online and then they crying because, oh man, my little 2080 Ti, I can't play the next Call of Duty. Nobody's seeing that. Nobody's coming out complaining about that. The games you see people complaining about are these new AAA games like Jedi Survivor or Hogwarts Legacy, to when you have to have a decent PC to run a game. Multiplayer games, not so much.
I mean, it depends also on lag as well, because if the frame rate is terrible because you're having to lower it, it's going to be some sort of restriction than just having to go. It depends on the specs of the game and what people are capable of playing. Because if you have multiple mid-level gamers on PC and the game is just about chugging along, and then you have a bunch of high-end PC users who don't want to play on lower settings, there's going to be a disconnect. People are going to tune out.
If people want to play these games, and also frame rate, that's not due to what spec you're playing on. That's due to if the developers take their time and if they actually optimize the game. Just like with Jedi Survivors, if you had a 4080, even if you had the highest spec computer or PC, it didn't matter because the game wasn't optimized well. That has nothing to do with spec. That's all about optimization. So as long as PlayStation gets these PC developers, whoever that studio is who they got that's porting these games over to PC for them, as long as that developer optimizes the game well, which they don't have a good history of optimizing games well, because you've seen it happen with The Last of Us Part 1 remake when they went to PC and how terrible that shit was. But as long as they can get the games optimized well, nobody will have to worry about that.
Yeah. I am going to see, but obviously, with Forza Motorsport, we've seen what that's happened on PC. Jesus Christ. 4090, RTX 4090 PCs are incapable of running it.
See?
And that is,
that's
you
that,
can't
that,
buy
that's
a
game optimization, man. See, now, but that's not because of the spec. That's because of the developer and the optimization. That has nothing to do with the spec, which is what I spoke on earlier. You can have the best PC ever, but if the developers didn't take their time porting the game over, then
I mean,
you just have a bad experience.
I want to know what they've been doing for the last 5 years. The highest end graphics card cannot handle Forza Motorsport. Jesus Christ, what are the developers using?
I have no idea.
That's madness. But Jim Ryan is obviously being taken over by Hiroki Totoki, my favourite executive in the entirety of the industry. Brilliant name. I love that name. Hiroki Totoki is the only name.
That is quite a funny sounding name.
I mean,
they came
name,
out.
I know
they came
Ryan.
Out and said that
the person that alone, he's got my thumbs up.
They came out and announced the guy that's taking over for Jim Ryan next year.
Have they?
No, I'm asking you.
I mean, no, Hiroki Totoki will be taking over as interim CEO. They haven't announced who's going to be the full-time CEO after March 2024. Totoki will be taking over from March 2024 as interim because he is technically vice CEO. He's just under Jim.
He's the second in
who's
going to
be the full-time. I personally will vote for Totoki because Totoki is a gamer. Jim Ryan is not. Jim Ryan is 100% strictly a business mind. He has no interest in video games whatsoever. He just sees it as a moneymaker. Totoki, on the other hand, has come from a development background. He used to work for Sony in Japan. He's very, very versed with game development. He's worked for the previous two CEOs before Jim Ryan. He's the bright person for the job, in my opinion. I think he should be. He should have been the CEO anyway. If I was looking between the two of them of who I'd want to run Sony Interactive, I would have gone to Totoki every time. I don't think Jim Ryan's the right person for the job, to be honest. Yeah. If Jim Ryan did come out and say, okay, we've had, like, the reason I'm retiring is because I don't want to commute anymore, but you've been commuting for the last 30 years, so that is complete nonsense. I personally think he's kind of being forced out, but I do think Totoki is the right person to kind of take over that role. I want to get your guys' thoughts, because you two have been very quiet. Alex and Nightmare, what are your thoughts? What is Jim Ryan's legacy?
I don't think it's going to be, like, the failing consoles. I think that'll only be brought up if someone wants to bash on Jim Ryan. I think it's like, if someone wants to just be like, you know, he wasn't good, and then someone's like, oh, but why? And then they're like, PSVR2 in the portal. And
I mean, that is what he's going to be remembered for, is the stuff that he's done in between the time he started and the time he's retired. I mean, the PS5 is going to be his crowning achievement, because it's already sold 42 million copies. It's on course, I think, to beat the PS1. Has it already beaten the PS1? It has, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been beaten. Yeah. They were saying that these numbers is on par with the PS2, because they saying that this is outdoing the PS4. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
As far as it, I think probably if they start releasing more single player games, Marvel Spider-Man is probably going to be the biggest game they've got this year. I haven't heard anything about next year's schedule. I think the majority of next year's schedule is live service. I don't know if they've got any single player games coming. But,
well, Death Stranding 2,
I mean, Wolverine, I don't even think that's next year. I think
that's not coming until 2026 or 2025. But yeah, they were talking about Death Stranding 2. And then, you know, they got, again, I mean, I don't know why people always leave out third-party exclusive deals. That's what made the Xbox 360 be so fire. So I don't ever subscribe to leaving out games that aren't first-party. Because they got FF7 Rebirth coming out next year as well, and that game is looking phenomenal. It doesn't have to be a Sony first-party studio. As long as it's only on the box,
That's what I'm here for. Like, I would never subscribe to the thing and be like, oh, well, Microsoft didn't make the first Gears of War 1-3, so those games don't count for making the box great. As long as the game, as long as the box has exclusive titles, that's all that matters to any consumer.
Yeah. I will admit, I do keep forgetting about Rebirth because it's been so long since that game was announced and I just completely flipped my mind. But yeah, you got that coming out. I mean, Wolverine's probably not out for another 2 years. They do need to update. They do need some more, like, big announcements to be made. Their next one, I believe, in February, the next State of Play, which I'm looking forward to. We know Nintendo's got one last one this year, I think it's in November. If they don't do it in November, it'll be in January. They may push it back, but that'll be for the Switch 2 announcement. And then I don't know what Xbox is doing. I think Xbox may have gone quiet now until maybe March or April next year, when they do their next big Xbox showcase.
Yeah.
But Alex, I want to get your thought quickly before we move on. What is Jim Ryan's legacy? What is his biggest achievement?
Well, your major about the PS5.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say.
Yeah. I do think that is going to be his crowning achievement because it is a massive success for him. But how well that PlayStation 5 has done. Brian, there's a lot of people that don't like it. They say it's ugly. Personally, I think it's one of the best looking consoles I've ever seen. I'm hoping that they do bring out a PS5 Slim, which is what the rumours are for next year. This could be the next hardware release. We know that the next PS6 is in development. That is confirmed. The game is, but the console probably looking at 2027,
2028. How many did you say sold the PS5?
The PS5 has sold 41.67 million copies.
Do you know off the top of your head how many Nintendo Switch sold? I don't know, that's why I'm asking.
Nintendo, I believe, at the moment is around 80, 85 million.
Oh, wow.
Lifetime. That's the original Switch. That's the original Switch.
Right.
I thought it was, like, in total, because I keep on hearing, like, 100 million being thrown around.
Yeah. They've shipped 100 million. They haven't classed that as sold yet. Once the people have actually received it, then, I mean, when they say ships, they're not shipping them straight to customers. They're going to stores.
Okay. They passed 100 million. They over 100 million.
Yeah, they've shipped 100 million cons, like, more than 100 million.
No, Major. I'm telling you, you can go Google this. We can do this little section again. Because they have sold over 100 million. Sold over 100 million.
Are you sure? The last count I had was 5 something.
I'm positive. Major, I'm positive.
So I won't ask any more questions.
Hold on.
You can go Google it.
Here's the keys.
Hold on, console units sold. Okay, yeah, they have.
Major, why are you always
129.5 million.
Why would you do this to me, Major? This is like, you just gotta be like the fifth time you be like, bam, are you sure? I'm like, yes, I'm sure. Let me go get on my keyboard, click the click and clack, and then go look it up. Like, no.
I'll be honest, I haven't checked sales figures in probably a few months, so I haven't seen that. But
I don't ever check it, but you know what? You know how I keep up to date with stuff like that, Major?
Yeah.
Them damn console warriors. They spend so much time fighting over plastic and companies who don't care about them. They care more about the sales than they do about actually gaming. And that's how I see all this shit. It's because these dudes, they the ones out here on the front lines touting sales numbers.
To be honest, I don't give a shit how many units the console sold.
Facts.
I honestly do not care one little bit. It doesn't interest me.
I'm right there with you. Like, it does nothing for us. You know what I'm saying? I guess you could argue, like, okay, the more something sells, then the more likeliness that you have to getting a better sequel for a game or something like that. But other than that, it's like, I don't work for Nintendo. I don't work for Sony. So it's like, why can I care about how much something is selling?
Yeah, that's true. I honestly don't give a crap. I mean, it's one thing if something sells, breaks records, then yeah, that's fantastic. But as far as, like, how many units could buy by 1% how many Xbox has sold more than I don't care. I honestly don't give, like, people send that to me, I don't care. Anyway, moving on though, there has been news about Ubisoft. We've got to talk about this quickly, because obviously we already were speaking about Mirage.
Oh man, I hate this game, yo.
What are you playing?
Baldur's Gate 3.
You hate it?
I hate it, bro. The combat, bro. The more and more I play this game, the less and less I like the combat. And I haven't seen, I know we haven't did the podcast, and I was hoping to maybe hear some insight about it from some people who played it, people who may be more truthful than others. Because the internet, everybody on the internet, they just cap for it. And it's like, I've seen so much stuff people didn't mention, like stuff about, like, for example, the animations for the game look like absolute crap. Like, it looks trash. Like, when you climb a ladder, like whenever you climb a ladder, it's trash. Whenever you make your character run, it's trash. Like, it's just the animations are piss poor. And I haven't seen anybody talk about it. And I've seen so much crying about loading screens for Starfield and it being a next-gen title when this game has hella loading screens. And the more, and like the deeper and deeper you get into these acts and deeper you get into combat, so you have a party of four people, but you end up fighting enemies, like 10 to 9 enemies a battle, right, the deeper you get into the combat. And after your teammates go, you have to wait for the other enemies to go, and you cannot speed it up. And it's like, I've been sitting through battles so when I have to wait to, you know, to get back to my turn longer than I had to sit through any loading screens inside Starfield.
Mate, that is going to be the title of this episode.
Like, man.
Baldur's Gate 3 is trash.
like, for me, right, the main saving grace for this game is the stories and the sub-stories. Because the plot and everything is just like, well, like Bethesda games. The faction quests and the side quests are always better than the main quests.
That is true. I mean, you get that with a lot of stuff. A lot of RPG games are like that. I will say, everything I've seen, it just seems like the main takeaway for a lot of people is the amount of dirty naughtiness that's going on.
That's all you see, Major. And the reason why that's all you see is because of everything that I just described to you is that watching somebody play this game and, like, fight and, like, walk around, like, everything in between is trash. And that's why you don't see any clips about that. That's why you don't see anybody sharing those clips. You only see people having sex with bears and squirrels and shit.
Yeah, it's just the shock value, I think. That's the only takeaway I've seen from people on Twitter and YouTube and Twitch and wherever. It's, look at this crazy cutscene I found. I'm having sex with an animal. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah.
Like, the feedback, like, I haven't actually seen anybody talk about gameplay or, like, do proper walkthroughs. Like, the majority of streams are people just skipping around between cutscenes.
Mm-hmm.
I just go for the bits that are shock value.
Yeah.
But in a very weird transition, which I really, it's just very unfortunate. Ubisoft executive has been arrested for sexual offences by French police, three of which are fairly big names in the industry, surprisingly. Serge Hasco, was former head of the company's editorial team for Ubisoft, resigned in July 2020 among the big, Me Too gaming industry moment that kind of spawned for Activision Blizzard and brought them under the microscope. Ubisoft faced similar allegations, and one of the biggest names out of Ubisoft was Serge Hasco, who was used to write the scripts for their games. Tommy Francois as well, former VP of the editorial team, he was arrested on Tuesday. There have been three others that were also arrested. There were 50 allegations against all five men, including two that went on their own. Well, the majority of them came from the Games Trade Union, Solidaris Informatique. Serge and Tommy were arrested by French authorities after there were allegations made that they had sexually assaulted a woman. Among those arrested, obviously, were Tommy Francois, who was arrested from his home. 50 allegations made by current and former employees. They were filed with French police in 2021. The investigation is now complete. Two victims came forward of their own accord. They didn't go through the union. But some of the others that stepped down during that period, who are also being touted as the next series of people to be arrested, included Yanis Mallet, who was the Canada's managing director, head of HR Cecile Corneau, creative director Maxime Balland, and Valhalla creative director Ashif Ismail, who now works for Tencent and is currently working on several games. So that isn't great. Ubisoft are in a bit of hot water. They're back in the news again for stuff. Even though these guys have all been let go from the company, it isn't a great thing that when you're, that five of your senior executives have been arrested And these are the people that are not just like middle management. They are hot. They were high up on the Ubisoft board. They've all been let go. There's also news this week, before we go into deals of the week. The FTC is once again trying to block the Microsoft ABK acquisition. Celebrate Microsoft, Xbox fans. The acquisition is closing. Next Friday, you will not be hearing any more news about it.
Thank God, bro.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, the CMA's final announcement is on Tuesday. They've already announced they've approved the deal. There hasn't been, as long as nobody comes forward and makes some big outlandish claims, the deal's done by Tuesday. Friday, Microsoft said they're closing on Friday next week. So just in time for EGX, Microsoft will own Activision Blizzard, which will be the final bit of news. We ever talk about it, because it's done and dusted, alright? No more talking about Activision Blizzard. The FTC, though, is trying to block the acquisition in the US for the fourth time. Right? And this is why I feel sorry for everybody in America when you've got politicians as stupid as this. They've been rejected three times in court. They rejected their initial policy, they got rejected in San Francisco with Judge Corley, and then they got rejected to the US Court of Appeals, rejected their claims. They're now trying again. And the thing is with this thing, okay, this FTC hearing, it's an FTC hearing, okay? It's not in court. The judge is an FTC employee. They bring Microsoft into their own court with their own judge and say, oh, but there is a conflict of interest here, all right? I don't know how this works in the US, but this just screams of corruption. So I'm not even going to pay attention. Once this deal closes on Friday, the FTC can't do diddly. Apart from try to sue them, and even then they'd have to go to civil court to try and sue them. It's not going to work in their own. So it's done and dusted. Microsoft owns ABK, that's it. Now it's time for deals of the week.
Da, 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 da. It deals of the week. If you don't find what you want, then...
Sorry, in front of you out.
Yeah, sorry, we can't help you out.
Kicking us off this week, Wargroove Deluxe Edition on PS4 is just £3.95 with free shipping from the game collection. You can pick up SteamWorld Dig 2 on Nintendo Switch via the eShop for just £2.99. It's currently 80% off. That deal was expiring on the 27th of October, so you have quite a bit of time now. Dragon's Quest Heroes 2 on PS4 right now through the game collection is £7.95 with free shipping. Mad Max on Steam via CD Keys this week is just £2.99. One of the first games I think I ever beat on the Xbox One. I absolutely love Mad Max. You can also pick up Days Gone on Steam right now through CD Keys for 17% off. It's down to £11.99. Lego 2K Drive on PS4 right now with Shop 2 is £25.85 with free shipping. You pick up Diablo 4 Standard Edition on the Xbox One and Series X through CD Keys for £37.99. The new High on Life DLC right now that has just dropped, I think it was a couple of days ago now, the new DLC. You will need a VPN for this, set it to Turkey, but you can get it via Xbox deals for £1.28. That will be shipping from Turkey, so you will need a VPN. Star Wars Jedi on Xbox Series X right now with free shipping is £37.95. You can also find Lego 2K Drive Standard Edition for the Switch for £23.99 through CD Keys. Shin Megami Tensei 2 Nocturne HD Remaster on PS4 with free shipping through the game collection is 30% off this week, down to £11.95. Super Mario Party in Joy-Con with Pastel Purple and Pastel Green on Switch with free shipping is down to £72.26. That's through Amazon deals. The Tales of Arise on Steam right now through CD Keys is £12.19. You can also pick up Power Wash Simulator on PS5 with free click and collect through Smiths for £14.99 with £2.99 delivery. Rebel Galaxy and Rebel Galaxy Outlaw double pack on PC right now through Fanatical is just £1. Child of Light Ultimate Edition on Switch is £5.99 this week through CD Keys. And last but not least, a PlayStation 5 HD camera. It is second hand, but you can pick it up through CEX for £18 with £2.95 delivery. And that is all for your deals of the week. Anyway, it's a shame Larry's not here. I did invite him, Larry Bundy, onto the episode this week. Unfortunately, he's at home, he's poorly, which is unfortunate, because the next story is involving his arch rival, his nemesis, the person he hates more than anybody on the entire planet, Peter Molyneux, the former head of Lionsgate Studio, the guy who made Fable and lied so much that I'm surprised he's not technically the face of Lies of P. Peter Molyneux is the biggest scam artist in the entire industry, and he is about 3 months late with his newest venture because he's releasing his NFT blockchain game next week.
Oh,
and,
crying out loud!
Oh, no. Chloe, you haven't heard the NFTs. Yeah, the NFT craze is gone, alright? He's about 3 months late because there was a poll, a survey done of all NFTs that are currently on the blockchain. 95% of them are completely worthless. And the remaining 5% are worth no more than £5. So this entire blockchain business team is a failure from the off. It's not going anywhere. And I really wanted Larry to come in and just roast Peter Molyneux, because that would have been the perfect culmination to this story. But unfortunately, it's not here. However, it's claimed the game will be an unforgettable business adventure, because it's a business team. I don't know too many games, right, or even businesses where, legal ones anyway, where you have to pay to get to actually be part of the business. I haven't heard any of that happening anywhere, alright? So this is a blockchain game and you have to give Peter Molyneux money to buy an NFT just to play this game. According to the publisher Gala Games, who mainly does blockchain games, blockchain tech, blockchain games are failing left to right and centre. I don't even know why they even bothered with it.
No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah, ownership and creativity is apparently taking centre stage. That's the big tagline. Players will own a piece of land in the virtual world. That means Atlas worth absolutely sod all. To do that, you buy legacy deed keys, which are essentially NFTs. And the deed keys offer you a chance to own a piece of land and empower your partners to win real rewards. It just sounds fucking terrible, really. players are still looking to own land again, combine them from Marketplace to OpenSea, with prices ranging from, this line gets best, $6,000 to $40. So not $40 to $6,000.
What?
Let's just start at $6,000. No, it's $40 to $6,000. You have to buy an NFT for six. If you buy an NFT from Peter Molyneux, of all people, the guy that lied and said that everybody that purchased the game, he's going to plant a tree, and he promised a big competition to beat this level, and I think it was in, like, Black and White or Fable or something, and somebody did it, and he offered him, like, you could be in the game and you're going to do this and that, and it's like a big grand competition, and then he lied about it, and the winner got absolutely nothing. If you trust that guy to give him $6,000 for an industry that technically no longer exists, right? It's dead. Nobody's buying any NFTs. You won't be able to resell them ever. So you're basically just giving this guy $6,000 for nothing. Then you're an idiot, alright? The game was originally announced 2021, when the NFT blockchain craze was at its peak. He's now releasing it in a time where NFTs are dead. So, great business mind there, Peter Molyneux. It's just fucking stupid. The crypto market has obviously gone a massive crash. There's no more investments. Nobody's investing in it. This is just, it's a completely stupid idea. Molyneux's previous 2014 game was called Godus. It was an early access god game. Despite being in early access on Steam, has all but been abandoned. The game has gone anywhere. They've never released the full game. There's been so many, like, flipping, so many promises Peter Molyneux has made, and he's just lied. I really wish Larry was here, because he would cap this off beautifully. But Peter Molyneux is a scam artist. Do not buy anything from him, okay? Just want to make that perfectly clear for everybody listening who may be thinking, oh, I'm going to go buy an NFT from the guy who made Fable. Please don't. Please don't do that.
I'm going to want Master Scam back then.
Yeah, nobody should buy anything from Peter Molyneux ever again. He's just a scam artist. He's one of the worst people in this industry. He's a liar, right? Scalpers are back at it again, though. You remember the Pokemon promo cards that were going around last week? I know you will, Mark. Oh, yeah. You're a bit of a Nintendo fan.
No, I'm not a Nintendo fan. I'm a Pokemon fan. There's a difference.
Okay.
There's a mile.
I mean, you know about the Pokemon Pikachu card, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So there was this big, meant to be this big museum collaboration. They were going to auction off this Pokemon card. Apparently, scalpers swarmed the museum to buy them all. They were there in the hundreds to buy all the Pikachu cards. Nobody got one, apart from scalpers.
I see how much this is on, like, eBay.
Yeah, it's going to end up on eBay for, like, £10,000 or something stupid. I'm looking on eBay. I haven't seen one yet, but I'm going to keep looking. The merchandise, which is being launched, obviously, has 50 years of the Van Gogh Museum. Includes a statue, a plush, a tote bag, and more. You basically meant to buy them. But those who purchase any items will receive a special Pikachu promo card, which has a grey felt hat on. But following release of the card, there's been videos of it circulating online. I have seen them. I'm going to leave a link down below so you can go watch it. Of people swarming the museum in the hundreds, if not the thousands, taking these cards. They didn't want anything else. They just wanted the cards. The amount of scalpers at this flipping event was ridiculous. Those unable to visit the exhibition, which runs until the 7th, will be able to get a Pokemon card by purchasing items through the collection on the Pokemon Center website. So they did learn their lesson. You won't be able to get one from the museum. You have to go on the website to get it. So they did keep some back, thank God. However, this isn't the first time the Pokemon Company has collaborated with the museum. They did the same thing with the Tokyo Metropolitan Art Museum in 2019. So this isn't the first time they will do more of these. But according to the trading card price, the card is now worth roughly £540 or $670 for a piece of paper. It's just mental. But these scalpers apparently now trying to sell them on several... I think it's on like Reddit sites and stuff. They're not going through eBay. I think eBay's kind of cottoned on as well. They're cracking down on scalpers. I'm trying to keep an eye out on eBay, see if any pop up. I think they probably will do by the end of this week.
I saw a couple on there that were like 150 to like 350, but I don't know how many of them are actually real.
I don't think. I mean, if they're only selling us for £350 and the card's worth £200 more than that, I don't think they're coming from scalpers. I think you probably would look for ones that are like £2,000-£3,000, and then also like $4,000, and I'll bet you any money those could be scalped. But you can buy them from the Pokemon website. You can't just, you don't, you've got to be able to get anything from the museum at the moment, but there is some at the web, on the website until they replenish their stock. We've got to move on to Capcom though, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Dan. Capcom's president is saying that he thinks games should cost more than $70.
I mean, that wouldn't be the first time we heard these developers say that, you know. They always come around every once in a while, and they make a, you know, they make a good case for how much money it costs for games, and everything else is going up, so how come video games aren't going up? It's just...
I mean, they always come out and say that. It's gone from 50 to 60 to
70
in
10
years.
I mean, yeah, but... Video games. I vividly remember going to the store with my dad to buy games on my Nintendo 64. Like, I know I got Donkey Kong 64, and that game costed almost $80 back when that game came out. They've always fluctuated, but for the majority of most people can say that they remember games costing $60, and that right there being, you know, the static amount.
Yeah. I remember going back to when I was a kid. I think it was Super Mario, and I tried to buy the first limited edition. My mum was there to get it for me for Christmas, and that game was like 120.
Yeah, see, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know what goes into how much money it costs to make them games, or how much money they have to pay.
I'll give you an idea because we are making a game. As you guys know, if you listen to this podcast, we are making one. I will give a shout out. We have hired a few more people, but we have had interest in more publishers to talk to us about doing it. I am going to be finishing off stuff this week because it has taken an exceedingly long time to get done. I do want to give a quick shout out to Monterio and Rogelio, who are the two lead artists and animators on the project. They have been an absolute godsend. I do thank them very much. But there is a move trailer we're going to be sending out this week as well to publishers. But to answer the question, how much a game costs, our game for 12 people, so the majority, 90% of it's just wages. It's averaging around £1.4 million.
That's crazy.
Because the average wage for a developer, somebody with experience who's previously worked on games, is around £50,000 a year. That's not including if they are coming to the office, because you have to pay reimbursement for travel and stuff like that, but also the time, and there's also tax issues and things. But then that's not just including that. I mean, you've also got, like, development costs. So we need software. We need to pay monthly for 3DS Max. You need to pay for, obviously, Unreal Engine, or after a period of time. You have to pay for Photoshop. That costs a lot of money. We need new equipment. So stuff like tool boxes and Wacom Cintiq 16 Pro, which is basically the art tool, which works with tablets and stuff. We need new computers. There's a lot of money we need to pay for our emails and the Slack channels and Dropbox storage, and it's going to average roughly, I mean, half of the budget is marketing. Our marketing budget, we were advised to charge about £500,000 in marketing to add that to our budget. Our total budget, regardless of development cost, is around £1.7 million. Mm-hmm. And there are 12 people working on this game. So you can imagine how expensive a AAA game will be.
Yeah.
So, development's going up. It's ridiculously expensive to make a game. It's more expensive than making a movie. Because really, it's a movie with a camera and a person in front of it.
But they make so much. Like, if you have a successful launch, like, and that's what I be talking about this a lot of the time, right? And this is why you see a lot of these new studios, and like, I mean, you know, whenever they come out and they try to put out a game, and if it flops, that kills the studio. But if it succeeds, the amount of money that they make back is crazy.
How much would Stardew Valley have cost to make? Because obviously it was one guy.
Oh, not much. Not much.
No?
If I could do it all on myself, it'd probably cost me $2,000-$3,000. But unfortunately, no, I can't code, and I'm not a very good artist. So I have to find people to help me.
But think about how much money that one guy made back, though, Alex. You see what I'm saying? And, like, think about, like, all these indie games that come out and then they blow up, like games like Sea of Stars, games like Hollow Knight, games like Stardew Valley. Those games that only have, you know, five or six people working on them. I know Hollow Knight was only made by Team Cherry at the time, and I think it was only, like, two or three guys. And Stardew Valley was made by one guy. But it's, like, think about how much money that these people make back. And now they got, you know, a pretty good reception, and then they get publishing from, like, Nintendo or Sony and stuff like that going forward.
Yeah.
I will say also the amount of money you get back is about 50% of total revenue. So, for example, if a game sells 10 million copies, it's rated at £50. Even a million copies at £50, that's £50 million. They're getting 50% of that, 25. That's sales for that period. Then you've also got licensing and advertising and merchandise. Like, you can make 30, 35 million off that. But the issue then becomes is when you've got a big studio, you've also got to pay for everything. And if your game is successful, you could go back to a publisher and make a second one. Majority of people don't do that, though, because they're giving away 50%, so they'll end up spending most of that making the game by themselves.
Yeah.
This is now where also the issues have come from all the layoffs over the last week from Epic Games and Sega and BioWare and, you know, all of the Team 17. We did have an exclusive on that as well. It's on the website if you guys want to go check it. Team 17, the press release they put out and the news that came out that a number of the staff were being let go was worse than they originally said. Because they claimed that the reason they're releasing people because of sales issues, which is restructuring, was the word they used. But we got an inside source at Team 17, so I asked them, what is actually going on? Is all this accurate? They said no. The letting go of QA testers is only a small portion of who they're letting go, the majority of which is 30% of their marketing team, 30% of their sales team, 30% of their admin team. They're shedding hundreds. And the CEO saying that he was stepping down in quotations is not accurate. In fact, he's being forced out the door. He's being told to leave. He doesn't want to. People in Team 17 are very unhappy. But a large part of it is because things are becoming so expensive and things are not selling well. There is not enough investment in the industry right now. I think we're about a 3 or 4 year low for third-party investment. people, the publishers therefore are not investing, so people are going to use their back reserves of that, you know, whatever they've made from their last game to keep people on. And unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do if you've got more staff than you're actually money bringing in, because it is ridiculously expensive.
Yeah. But just to get back on topic, though, man, all that stuff that, like, we just talked about, right? I feel like all that stuff goes hand-in-hand with that conversation about, you know, with that Capcom developer saying that he thinks that that people should have to pay more for video games. There's an argument for that being true, and there's an argument for that not being true. And I feel like on the consumer side, none of us want games to go up to be more than what they already are. But then there's an argument for the developers and for the people who make these things happen. There's definitely an argument for both sides. But I'm selfish, so I don't want video games to be more money because we pay enough already for me as a consumer. But I definitely understand, and I can see why they say that.
Going
on with why it isn't really a good thing if it does go up, is that there's so much stuff releasing just this month, and so much of it is $70 that most people won't even be able to play half of it. And if they go up to like 80 or 75 or something, then it's just going to be even worse. Because if like we continue to have months like October where there are like 20 AAA games coming out at the exact same time, no one's going to be able to play any of them.
I mean, I wouldn't say nobody, because gaming is a very selfish hobby. And there's plenty of people who can't afford it, and there's plenty of people who cannot afford it. That's why I said I think that there's an argument for both. But I can definitely see as a consumer as to why we wouldn't want games to go up. But I know for a fact that I know plenty of people who could definitely afford to continue gaming, and they wouldn't miss a beat, because that's part of the hobby. Whether if your hobby is buying every new release of Jordans that costs $300 per, you know what I'm saying, per release, or if people want to go out to like golfing, and you know how much those memberships cost. Everybody has a hobby, and hobbies aren't really cheap.
Yeah, but it just excludes a lot of people, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah. But a lot of hobbies exclude a lot of people. Everything is everybody. And if you have to decide between, being able to eat dinner or playing the latest and greatest Assassin's Creed game, and if you choose to go out and buy that Assassin's Creed game, I feel like most people, if that's what you're fighting for, then you got bigger issues than buying a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tsushimoto, Harihiro Tsushimoto, who was speaking to the Tokyo Game Show, he said that currently games are too cheap at $70. I don't necessarily agree with that. I do think that's a bit oversimplification, that it's too cheap. A lot of, I know he's saying, like, in Japan where he is, and occasionally in some, like, US states, $70 may be too cheap. When you look in the rest of the world, $70 is a fair chunk of change.
You think that's pricey? I've just spent $6,000 on a game.
What?
The Peter Molyneux one, I'm gutted.
You haven't done it, then.
Nice.
Capcom also announced last year it'll be raising its employees' base salaries by 30%.
Hang on a minute. So, they've gone... We need to charge more money for games at the same time as spending more.
Yeah. But they're not hiring people. They're just raising the employees they already have, their base salary, by 30%. So if a developer's on 50,000, that's an extra 15,000.
Yes, but this is also a section of society that are earning enough money as it is.
Yeah, I mean, 50,000 in the case of... If that was 50,000 in the UK, then that would put them in the top 1% of earners, and they're about to earn an extra 15%. So that's increasing the price and saying games are too cheap. I mean, that's really your fault, isn't it? I mean, if you're having to pay developers an extra 15% or an extra 30% on salary, and you promised them that, and then saying the games are too cheap, that's because you've increased your employee's salary by 30%. That is like nearly 20% higher than inflation. That's way above. I mean, they're already earning above inflation, but you're offering them an extra 30%. That's going a bit far. I mean, yeah, it's great for the developers. They're earning a ton of more money. But when you compare that to what consumers are having to shell out for games and saying the games are too cheap.
Agreed.
Yeah. Go ahead and increase these wages if you want to, but don't then try and pass the buck on to us.
I mean, it's not like Capcom developers are struggling right now.
Exactly.
They've done very well over the last 2 years. Resident Evil 8, they got Resident Evil VR coming. Street Fighter sold very well. I think it was like 6-7 million copies on Street Fighter they sold. Like, there's a lot. Like, Capcom is doing very well financially right now. And then, fair enough, you want to increase their wages, but don't then try and pass that on to the consumer. That's taking the mick. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, we're going to pay you. We'll just make customers pay, like, vastly more. We want you to pay more. That's ridiculous.
What is that, though? My local game store is closing down because of digital.
Yeah. I mean, digital is the way forward, unfortunately. We have seen this. I mean, physical... Granted, if you're an indie developer or publisher, making physical copies is expensive.
Yeah.
Like, because you're basically paying for the shipping, you're paying for the artwork, you're paying for the box, you have to pay for the disc. Like, you have to pay for the transfer of the data onto the disc.
It's just that, though, isn't it?
Entire manufacturing operation. And if all you got to do digital is just send out a license code. Like, obviously, they're going to look for the cheapest options to get that game published, and doing digital is vastly cheaper, especially when you have consoles now. Microsoft, PlayStation, Switch, PC has always been majority digital. They haven't really released any physical copies for PC games in a long time.
Yeah.
So digital is unfortunately the way forward. I will make one more note before we jump into a break. MetaQuest 3 is launching this month. I am going to try and get one. It's £480 though, so I might wait for the price to come down just a tad, because I'm still on MetaQuest 2. But I wanted to quickly touch on this for those asking. There was some questions more about the MetaConnect showcase. We have got an article on the website if you want to go learn more about Meta, the new MetaQuest headset. There was a big showcase last week, which just looked fantastic. I am so excited for the Quest 3. But both models of the both headsets are going to be ranging around £480. They're my highest price point is £620 for the 512GB model. We'll try and not get in on not paying £620. But the 512GB model does come with 6 months of MetaQuest Plus trial, which is basically their subscription service. You get a selection of games free every month. I think it's two every month, or the first day of every month. MetaQuest 2 is also going to be trying to compete with the new Apple headset for functionality and the amount of software upgrades that it's offering. Because the Quest 2 apparently the Quest 3, I should say, is also going to be able to, it's like a glass front, and you can see the things in front of you. So, like, the game will appear in front of you. It's not appearing in front of your face. It's appearing in the real world. It's majority AR, which is just fantastic. I love AR tech. But this is, like, leaps and bounds above anything that's currently on the marketplace. Apple obviously has their own, but that thing is going to cost nearly $3,000. I'm not spending that. Not a chance. But yeah, if those of you want to know more about the MetaQuest 3, there is an article on the website. I'll leave a link down below if you want to learn more about the MetaQuest 3 for what was announced last week and what was announced originally during MetaConnect, the previous one about the MetaQuest 3. There is a whole bunch of articles on the website if you want to go learn more, because there hasn't really been. We don't have a hands-on. I'm trying to get back in touch with Meta because they have been following us and retweeting us and stuff, so hopefully that's done enough for them to send us a sample. We're going to jump into a break. When we come back, we've got to discuss about Mark Hamill's latest interview, which is just ridiculous. And there's a couple of bits of movie news as well. When we come back, don't go anywhere.
SRB separation confirmed. Coming up on staging, the burnout of the twin solid rocket boosters at 2 minutes, 5 seconds.
Peanut gang with a Hoover, purpose sweep the street. Told babe what parts in war, the Brit can't see the tweet. Who are the greedy tweets? So sat my end up in a feeder tweet. Got 2 Jones times on a reader tweet. We bust down that ain't no Jesus feet. No G17, G19, had a G17, then a G19, had a 044 with a pin with wheat. Still gonna spin if need. There no small backstage, but go to us, can you bring it please? Or the K at least. Give me a tape with a G's. Bro just pushed it, tape with a G's. gangsters, drop his gold time, bro came out with keys. Straight eight autos, gangster, the need more sweet. For Halloween, was at Patrick's with feet. Was up by Simon Drown, he didn't kick his feet. I heard that news, I was right by the runway, made me feel like free. The season come like a pocket rocket, now the gang in central with feet. To my case, paper's printed, now I'm gonna monogram paper feet.
Run up the spells, throwback, run with the 12. Roll one, cover the scales, buying at a barbecue, better cover your girl. Hey, when I run in the mouth, see them running for hell. I'm in a final, but let me see Mammon again, I'll start with an L. We really leased it drowning, doing what free on an outing. Shootouts in the oldest clothes, wouldn't believe these outfits. Put down no brakes, wanna leave me if you take. Asked for the shorty, he told him I work for the farm, now they can't go from eight. Clean up gang with a Hoover, perfect sweep the street. Told Babel, parching war, the bridge can't beat this beat. Who are the greedest beat? So fat might end up in the speed of speed. Now studio time, gonna read this beat. We bust down, that ain't no Jesus speed. No G17, G19, had a G17, then a G19, had a 044, but the pin was weak. Still gonna spin this knees. Stay no smoke backstage, but go to us, they bring it, please. Was the K at least?
On a stress sativa, still put smoke on a whisker, leave her. Baby don't wanna lock the smoke, I just don't love her, leave her. Yo, had a list come like Peter, and a bunch like Cleaver. This ice on my wrist, there's a whole lot of money, so it's coming like beer. 04 Amy and Z had a brought back, and a brought down Kia. Now you'll find me in Venice, trying some shellfish, oh mama mia. Also, I was hopping that first time, bro, saying stop being selfish. Yo, now I just leave that stage full of strings like Elvis.
Ding dong in the outing, would've been a lost to found him. Can't be cool, need more friends on a board. Can't take the first and I'll get him an album. Go to the yard, man, want another piece of 45 like Alhan. Go to the runner, said he got more than a runner, and he's starting. Go get that car, congestion zone, got step with R. Pocket rocket, had it in a pouch, next to the brush of the metro car. Double our truck, stars in the roof, and we got a separate star. Ain't done it in a Tesla yet, if you do, that's less than an electric car. Clean up gang with a Hoover, perfect sweep the street. Told Babel, parching war, the bridge can't cheat this week. Who are the greedest beats? So sat my head up for the tea this week. Now studio time, gonna read this week. With bust down, that ain't no Jesus tea. No G17, G19, had a G17, then a G19, had a 044, but the pin was weak. Still gonna spin this knees. Saying no smoke backstage, but both to us, they bring it, please. Was the K at least?
Welcome back to the Talk Games Podcast, episode 116. We've got to talk about Mark Hamill. We did a recent video with the State Department to explain space, and he's included a lot of Star Wars lore and a lot of tips and stuff that he's kind of tied into Star Wars. I think he's brilliant in this interview. But he's been teaching people about space as the character of Luke Skywalker. It's a 7-part series that's being produced by the US State Department. The first one is on the Twitter account right now. I will leave a link down below to the Twitter post, but he is hosting from science fiction to science fact. He's obviously talking about how space is zero gravity and stuff. I really like the fact that they kind of tie this into Star Wars, and there has been rumours because of this that there is another Star Wars movie coming. I have heard a couple of stories about there going to be another Star Wars, that some of the original cast are being brought back again, that there's a couple of bits for... some of the directors and the writers from the original ones being brought back. What is your thoughts on a possible future Star Wars, considering the last trilogy was terrible?
As long as they bring back writers that aren't horrible and bring back directors that know what they're doing, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it can get any worse than what they already did.
Don't give them any challenges, I'm serious.
Listen, what they did with this last trilogy, what they did with this, I don't know how they can go and do anything worse than this. Because, man. So, hopefully,
have you watched y'all ain't right. That,
You said what? Hell no, I didn't watch that. Why would I watch
Boba Fett?
They should have left Boba Fett where exactly where he was at. No, I did not watch that. But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no.
Based on what they've been doing, how much lower can they go?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, I don't think we need the final ending.
That was bloody terrible. I thought the original, like, the trilogy that did after the original, like, the precursor trilogy was flipping awful. They just completely destroyed the franchise, that last one.
But then my question would be, how would... So, if the ending is that low, is it going to be possible for them to pull it back?
Well, they've already been redeeming themselves. Like, people love Ahsoka. People love Kenobi.
People like the Ahsoka show? Yes, people.
Like, I don't know if you go on Reddit or if you've been on Twitter at all. People have been loving Ahsoka. So, I mean, it appears to be that they have been redeeming themselves, so.
No, I've been seeing a lot of people getting behind that show.
I like Ahsoka. I like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Bashing on it.
You talking about that precursor one they did for that season? That completely flopped.
Which one?
The
one with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
You said that flopped?
Yeah, that did not do
I
very well.
That flopped. People didn't like terrible. It because they kept on stabbing people and then they would just come back. I think the third sister really ruined the show. That was the worst part.
Yeah.
And how the writers were like, let's just stab the Grand Inquisitor because he has no other moment in this whole timeline. He doesn't do anything else. No one will know that he's not dead.
Yeah, that's facts. I got a question for y'all, because if you look at the media, like, you know, the TV shows or look at, like, the video games, why do you think that the people that are in charge of the TV shows or the movies, why don't they take a page out of, like, the video games that they've been doing? Like, I feel like a Force Unleashed movie would do numbers. I feel like if they made a whole new character, like the Ubisoft game is coming out. That game looks phenomenal. People are really excited for that new Star Wars game. I feel like if they took a page out of what the video games are doing, maybe they could, you know, maybe they would breathe just give it new life, because I feel like a lot of people that are in the Star Wars fandom, they don't want to see old characters come back because there's a chance that they may ruin these characters' stories or ruin these characters. So why not just make new characters and stuff?
They do make new characters. Like, most of the animated shows have new characters. There is one Star Wars Resistance show, which was
a kid's show. I'm talking strictly on movies.
Because
they're too scared. It's because they're too scared to introduce new characters. And as for having video game characters in the movies, it's because they're worried that it's like, oh, who's this? Like, they can't show Starkiller because the vast majority of people are going to be like, who on earth is this guy?
Yeah, but isn't that part of the allure of Star Wars, and you being in his universe and you knowing that these other characters, people knowing that these other characters exist, but also knowing that there's still room for new characters to come about within this huge universe that they always tout. And, bro, people would love to see, if they could make Kyle Kestis come onto the big screen somehow, like, include Kyle Kestis somehow, I think people would really like that, because Star Wars has transcended just the movie crowd.
The problem is people go back to big movies like that, like Star Wars, like Harry Potter, for example. That was just the only other big movie I could think of for a second.
Marvel,
that's another one. For the actors, the story that they know. The issue is when you start trying to tie in things that, yes, wider fans of that series might know from the games, from whatever not, you end up destroying the core fan base of the actual film series themselves.
Because if you look at big franchises like Harry Potter with the Fantastic Beasts branched out and showed you new characters could come into a franchise and lead new movies going forward.
But I'm not even done yet.
That's only one. The Marvel movies also do this. They also do this. The DC movies, granted, most of those movies flop. They still do this. I'm just saying that the like the Star Wars franchise, out of everything that, that like I just named, is in a better position to try and do this because they have video games which have succeeded, and some of these video games have done better than some of those movies.
Okay, yeah, but here's why. It's because the people making the movies are too scared to try that. Because yeah. They are only concerned...
It's also they have a stigma against video game industry because of the fact video games sell more movies and TVs combined, on average. Then they're kind of seeing it as competition, and they don't want to compare it as competition in public, because that would then dampen, that would then make people realise that actually video games is bigger than movies, so why bother going to see it when video
but
games...
But don't the Star Wars games, like, don't everything Star Wars funnel into the same pot, so why would that even matter?
Not all of
it. It's not all of it, but they also, there's a stigma amongst movie and TV writers and directors that they don't really want to compete with video games, so therefore it doesn't exist in their mind.
Yeah.
That's crazy. As far as everything in Star Wars being in the same thing, ever since Disney bought it, everything's been kind of jumbled up. Like, the Legend series, no one
that's
knows
not what
that's
I meant.
Even canon.
That's not what
like,
I meant, though, man. Oh? Like, man, I mean, I'm talking about the revenue all funnels into the same pot.
Oh,
the
yeah.
revenue. Kind of. So that's why I said, why would it matter? Why would these directors and these TV showrunners even care or even have some kind of negative stigma to video games if they're all going into the same wallet? I don't know why Disney just wouldn't be like, hey, yo, do this, because in the end it's going to help us. You see what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about when I say it all funnels into the same pot. I don't mean – I get what you're saying, but that's a whole different conversation. I'm not talking about that. But yeah, man, that's all I got to say, you know. I'm going to shut up and let somebody else talk.
There's rumors of another Marvel. They might be updating for another Mandalorian series. Add another season in. I don't know whether that's true just yet. That is just a rumor. But the latest Mandalorian did quite well. From viewer point, there are some people that said they didn't like it. So I don't know whether they are going to completely revamp the series in some way. Because a lot of people, a lot of criticism I've seen has been it's getting stale. So it depends, obviously, on how they're going to redo the next one, if they do decide to do a next one. But there is obviously rumours of another movie coming. They're going to be doing another trilogy, which I think it depends on what they do. They can't use, obviously, include Skywalker. If they do decide to bring Rey back and the original cast, yeah, I don't think that will work. They may have to completely restart over. Where they're going to go in the timeline is completely up for the debate. But I would like to see them introduce some movie characters, or video game characters, and then Cal Kestis, for instance, I think is a brilliant cast. He's obviously, Cal is based on a real actor, so if they want to cast that original actor to play Cal, I do think there is a tie-in they could make with the EA series. Obviously, there's stigma in the movie industry, they don't want to compete with video games, because if they did, they would lose, and they frequently do anyway. But yeah, there's a lot you could realistically do with the characters that you haven't already done. Obviously, you've got Rey and Kylo, who kind of went off, and Kylo became good. So
Kylo's dead now.
Yeah, but he's like in the original movies, there was kind of a popular fan theory that once you turn to the dark side, it's very difficult to turn back. And I cannot remember, apart from the ending when Darth was on his deathbed, another Sith becoming good. So you could kind of tell the story of the tide turning, that Empire soldiers are getting sick of it, and they want to, and that basically forces, like, you haven't seen the total collapse of the Empire in the movies yet, is what I'm saying. That's the ending they need to tell.
Well, right now I feel like they're trying to use the TV shows to show the reason why the First Order happened at all. Because yeah. I know that was, like, one of the big complaints of the sequels, of, like, oh, how did this new empire just appear and no one do anything? Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to go and just show, like, a whole different story then.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm going to be interested to see where they go with it, because there is a lot there they could still do. I'm not interested in seeing any rehash of what they did with the last trilogy. I never want to see that again. Let's hope they don't do that. But finally, obviously, the SAG-AFTRA strikes are now over. All the writers are now returning to work. So we are going to finally get the Blade series is coming back. That is once again begun production. Deadpool 3 is once again begun production. And there has been also news for the Fantastic Four film is now redoing production. They are aiming to start filming in spring 2024. They have got a lot of work still to do with writing the script. Obviously, because the writer's not there, they weren't able to do it. So they're saying that spring, around April to May, is when they're going to start actually filming. So they're giving themselves 6 months to write this script out. This filming will begin at Pinewood in London, which is the big show they do, big studio they do for a lot of the big Hollywood movies. But with the actors now in negotiation, there are countless productions are finally getting to start again, including the new Fantastic Four film. Director Matt Shackman delivered a slight update on the studio's progress with Collider. He said that they're aiming to start filming in spring of next year, as long as they can nail down a fair deal with studios soon, and teasing an impending casting announcement, which is looking likely to be around the November to December, because we've got another couple of shows in the end of the year as well. After they were planning to go in production, Shackman said, "We're definitely going in front of the cameras next year, probably in the spring. It's going to be at Pinewood London Studios." Pointing out the scriptwriter Josh Friedman was brought back in March. He's able to work on the script again. He has had a lot of momentum. It's different in many ways. I wish I could be specific. He said, "I wish we'd say more, but we are doing things very differently from a story standpoint, from an approach to the filmmaking standpoint that really fits the material." It's currently slated to release in May 2025, Fantastic Four. It was announced during a massive Disney reshuffle because they have dropped a lot of their IPs. But they are saying that also there's been denied rumours of a standalone Human Torch movie, which is going to be interesting. Countless names also have been kind of teased for the film, including Adam Driver and Matt Smith, which is an odd pairing. We floated around to play Mr. Fantastic. I think Adam Driver would make a great Mr. Fantastic because that's kind of grungy. Matt Smith is obviously, as you know, he played Doctor Who. He was in the Morbius films as a villain. I'm not sure about that. Jack Quaid as well from The Boys has denied rumours that he's playing the Human Torch, but Chapman teased we may yet see some answers soon. They are still in the middle of the SAG strikes, but he's keeping his fingers crossed to begin announcing stuff very shortly.
Am I the only person thinking they're going to struggle to get the entire thing filmed and up for release within a year?
It's not even a year, it'd be like 8 months. I mean, films technically usually take about 7-8 months to film, but then you have another additional 6 to 7 months of rewrites, refilming.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then you've got to do your whole marketing campaign, which can last for God knows how long.
So they're going to start filming in spring next year and somehow get this up for May 2025?
I mean, it's probably going to be tight, but I think they did do stuff. They were beginning production before the strikes happened. And then when the strikes were announced and all the rights stepped away, they kind of had to stop. We don't know how far they were into filming when those strikes occurred. They could have been a year or two.
Yeah, but this article seems to imply that they are going to start it in spring.
Yeah, the start.
Which implies they haven't
They could have already written the script. I mean, there is a lot to do besides writing the script between now and spring. So they've got to cast and hire everybody back. They've got to obviously do, like, graphic design and stuff for the intros and do special effects and that, so they can then lay it over as the actors are going. There's kind of a big thing, like, there's a lot of it goes into making a movie like this. It's not just get the actors on and then put everything on. Like, these big studios they do have hundreds, or if not a thousand people working on one film. So it's very easily they could just, you know, they're basically still doing everything else around it while they're doing the actors are on set. So it's possible they could release in May. As far as if they're actually going to be able to in that time span, I mean, you're still going to need a couple of months to market in that film, otherwise no one's going to see it. So, yeah, it's a bit tight, but we don't know what they've done previously or what they're doing currently, is what I'm saying. You don't know what their current work schedule is. They're not just going to be one person writing the scripts and everyone's on layaway until, you know, spring of next year.
But then
and then
on the flip side, you also don't know what the work schedule of these actors that they're trying to get into it is.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to be casting, they're going to need to start nailing people down. We obviously, the actors' strike is now also over. So people like Adam Driver and that are going to be kind of free because they haven't been able to book anything in the meantime while they've been on strike. So if they get them now and they cast people now, and I do mean like immediately, because there's going to be a lot of filmmakers looking for cast, then yeah, I think it'd be all right. I mean, a big budget film like Marvel with Fantastic Four, it's most likely will be one of the top movies that people are going to be going for. So yeah, I think it'd be all right. I mean, May does sound a bit short. I will agree. It does sound like a bit of a close schedule, but you know, we don't know where they are right now. Another movie that has just released was The Exorcist Believer. I haven't seen this film yet, so I do not want spoilers if you've seen it. But I have been watching the Equalizer 3 and Blue Beetle this past week. I'm trying to catch up on the movies I've been missing. The Exorcist I'm watching tonight, so wish me luck.
what did you think of Blue Beetle?
I thought it was actually pretty good for a family film.
Thank you. I see so many people that are just like, no, it was horrible. And I'm like, it was fine.
I mean, I am a massive fan of the main actor, because he was obviously me in The Karate Kid and a few other independent films. I think he's brilliant. There's a couple of bits in the script that are cringy as shit when he's talking to the girl. I'm not going to spoil it if you haven't seen it, but there are some really, like, oh, please don't ever say that again moments. There's a few bits in there where the dialogue really needs some work. Like, it's the sort of thing where you kind of want to force your thumbs into your eyes for listening to how bad it is. Like, I used to say that sort of stuff when I was 12, and it's so awful. But,
well, it's not a DC movie without some really weird writing in the middle of it.
Yeah, there are points in that film where there is just like, oh, don't, like, please don't ever say that again. Like, if that was my kid, I'd slap him. But the movie overall, the cinematography, like the story, it's spot on to the comic books, it's spot on to the cartoons, it's very well done. The dialogue really is not great, but as far as a first basis where they're trying to relaunch like the Marvel Avengers, I think that was great. The whole thing about him trying not, like, he wants to kill someone and it doesn't, he wants to be the good guy, not the bad guy, even though technically the Blue Beetle originally was meant to be like a villain. And they kind of tease that into the lore of the film, which I think is brilliant. Like, not many Marvel movies do that, where they actually use the background of the character before making the film. There's a lot of elements of the cartoons and the comics in it. It's not just a complete rewrite, which I loved. I thought the film was brilliant, to be honest. I wouldn't say it's the best Marvel movie, obviously. It is family friendly. It's not to the, it hasn't got the scale or the budget of like Iron Man or Thor. Yeah, it certainly isn't comparable to Spider-Man. But it's from a family film, I did kind of see it as more like a Saturday morning movie. You know what I mean? With like, when you sit down with the kids and watch it. I think they could have gone made it a little bit more adult, because there have been rumors they're looking at doing Marvel Dark, which is why they were introducing Blade, and going more to the adult gory route. But this kind of like flies immediately in the face of that, because it is very kid friendly. So, you know, it's heads and tails. I liked the film. I know some people didn't, but I did like it. The Exorcist Believer though is a movie I'm really looking forward to. I have got a question for you guys. Which series is better from a horror standpoint, The Exorcist or The Conjuring?
On account of not liking horror films, I'm not going to know the answer to that.
I'm gonna say Conjuring simply because of what it's based on. I like paranormal stuff like that. I like that type of stuff. Not experiencing it, for sure, but I like learning about it. But I think I haven't watched the films, because I'm good. I don't really want to watch that. I'm good with horror until it becomes super gruesome and all that, and I'm good. I don't need that.
Boom. I can't watch horror movies regularly enough because of the fact it's so. Yeah, I have seizures, so getting like jump scares is not a good idea for me.
I watched The Resident Evil recently. Really enjoyed that.
Like,
what's that? What Resident Evil was that one?
The movie?
Yeah, the movie's on Netflix, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, the last movie was like, what, 7 years ago, roughly?
No, there's a new one on the Netflix.
I haven't seen it. I'll go back and watch it.
Yeah, it's just
I don't think I've seen one of them recently. Are we talking about, like, the TV series? Or one of the films?
No, it's, I'm sure it's Resident Evil, sure it is. Came out on Netflix a few weeks ago.
I can't even remember, mate. I'll have to go back on Netflix and watch it. I know there's quite a few, like, Netflix has updated quite a lot over the last couple of weeks. Like, there's a ton of new films on there. One of the movies is where Mark Wahlberg's in it. I can't remember off the top of my head. I've been watching that. That's brilliant. That is very good.
What? I'm always looking for stuff to watch with the wife. I don't really watch much telly, so something that will grip both me and my wife.
Yeah, I mean, that movie with Mark, well, I can't remember the name off the top of my head what it's called, but it's very, very good. It's just, it released like last week. It's definitely something to check out. Netflix, yeah, has been updated. One second, man. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, I have seen like a few of the Exorcist Believer's looking very good. There have been some people that are saying it's over the top, that it's trying too hard. I haven't seen it yet, but obviously, which is better, The Conjuring or the Exorcist series? Bearing in mind, the Exorcist is the OG, horror franchise.
Does that mean we've all got to say it's the Exorcist?
When you pick one or the other, I mean, which for you is scarier? Personally, I believe it's The Conjuring, but I'm not a fan of like the later Exorcist films. I think they're a little bit silly.
Yeah.
I think, like, real-life Conjuring crap would be scarier than the movie, probably.
I mean, The Nun, when it came out, I thought was bloody terrifying. I haven't seen The Nun 2 yet, but I have not heard good things about that.
Yeah, I stopped caring about The Nun when I saw the trailers for the second movie, and I was like, oh, it's the same thing, just with a 2 in front of it.
It's very, like, yeah, they're just repeating it. But like the earlier Conjuring stuff I thought was brilliant. When they were relying more on like the notes and the books and the real people, I thought it was kind of decent. But then they started going a bit silly. I'm not really a massive like horror fanatic. I do like the original stuff.
Yeah, I've never really been a huge fan of horror films in general, so...
Okay, well, I'll move on then. Just
yeah.
Nobody can answer the question.
last bit of news. You might have been able to.
Last bit of news this week, though, is CD Projekt Red has confirmed a live-action adaptation of Cyberpunk 2077. I did reach out to CDPR, asked whether it was a TV series or a movie. They didn't want to comment on that. They said no comment, so that's fine. But they are working with Anonymous Content. If you don't know who they are the production company behind Mr. Robot. They've also done several like big budget movies. They worked on True Detective as well, the TV series. They've worked on Spotlight and Revenant, which are Academy Award winning films. They have done a lot of like big budget films. They've also announced Cyberpunk, the CDPR. They're working with Studio Trigger again, the Netflix anime Cyberpunk Edgerunners.
Right, so that basically means that this is just going to end up going on Netflix exclusively, then.
I'm hoping not. I don't want to. I don't want to keep having to go to Netflix to watch everything. I am hoping they do release a big budget film because I do think more people need to kind of see their vision. And plus, because of the limitations of what they originally planned for and what Cyberpunk eventually became, what it is now, there is kind of a disconnect of what they could actually do in the game. Whereas in a movie, they could really kind of bring their vision to life. And I do think, I want them to make a film. I'm not really interested in a TV series unless they cast Pan Am Palmer. Then I'm in. For that one. Bam knows exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah, Pan Am. I need to see Pan Am on screen. Yeah, I know it's not a real person, but if there is any chance there is somebody out there that looks like her, I love Pan Am. I love her deeply. Anyway, if... What are you guys hoping for? Are you hoping for a TV show, a movie? Like, what would you like to see if they do go the movie
route? I hope they go down the movie route, because a TV show would just be... The problem with creating a TV series out of a game is you can only take it so far before it becomes stupid.
Yeah.
Well, depends. If they go like The Last of Us route, where it's like a beat for beat recreation and then just mix up a few things, then I feel like it'd be fine, but I think for a big game like Cyberpunk, I don't know how they couldn't do a movie.
Yeah, but that's the point, though. Like, that's why I'm saying it would have to be a movie, the only way you can do it, like you said, is a beat-for-beat translation, almost.
I'm going to go with series.
How are you going to do a series, though? Because at some point, your content's going to run out.
But if I've got to watch one more episode of Grey's Anatomy, I will cry. So that's I need to get something out. I can't do it anymore, guys. I can't.
They could actually do either one, because there's so much lore surrounding Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk's lore doesn't end at the video game. There's books. There's a board game. There's a lot of characters. There's so much more that they could be doing with the lore of Cyberpunk. So even if they do a movie or a TV series, it doesn't have to revolve around the events that happened within the game.
That's what they are saying, though. It is going to be, like, direct tie onto the game.
Direct tie onto the game, how? As in, they're going to cast V and Pan Am, thick booty ass. And
oh, mate, I want Pan Am so bad. I want Pan Am so bad. Well, I real life Pan Am.
I haven't seen that.
We both have a thing for Pan Am, dude. We've said this before.
Oh, yeah. Pan Am, everybody else on the panel needs to go play Cyberpunk and just see Pan Am.
Oh, my God.
But I don't know, man. If you're only going to follow a video game, then I would rather get, like, an animated version. I don't really want a live-action version.
They are working with Studio Trigger again for working on the Edge Runner series. So I'm thinking there probably will be another series of that. But as far as the actual game goes, they have said they are working on a live-action version project. They wouldn't specify whether it's TV or movie. So it's obviously... I mean, we know that when they try to transition stuff to TV, it doesn't always well. Last of Us, I think, is probably the best adaptation there's ever been. I don't think anything's going to top that.
I hated that.
How do you hate that?
Because I hated it. There was a bunch of stuff in it. Number one, they did not do a good job at showcasing how cruel and how messed up Joel was within that TV show. And then also, there wasn't enough episodes to even get the relationship build up from Joel and Ellie.
Well, if you want the relationship build up, go play the game.
But we're not talking about the game. You see what I'm saying? Nightmare, like, this is where the conversation starts to get fuzzy with people who like the TV show and people who didn't like the TV show. You ask me why I did not like the TV show, then I give you the reason why I didn't like the TV show, and then you say, well, go play the game. We're not talking about the game. We're talking about the TV show. And this ties in with the whole Cyberpunk live action thing. Nothing that they do will equal up to how good the video game was. It's never going to measure up. That's the problem with live-action stuff.
I mean, it depends. I mean, Last of Us, I think, is probably an extreme comparison. But at the same time, if they can go... Like, I don't know whether you'd actually want... If you'd even want to see, like, a one-to-one recreation. But even then, if they do that way, then you'd have to recast... Like, you'd have basically just be telling the series over... Like the whole game. And I don't know if people actually want that. I think they want to kind of see where, like, a new adventure, but keep the same characters, because you can't make a Cyberpunk movie or a TV show without V. I mean, that's kind of the whole point, is the game is about him.
Right. So, but who's going to be V at that point? Is it going to be a female V or?
Male. I think it's going to be male V, because I do think that they are going to be looking, if they are, like, the majority of the male, like, love interests in Cyberpunk are terrible. I hate them. I can't physically stand them as people. But then you've got interesting characters like Judy and Pan Am, which are going to be playing.
But you've seen most of these studios that come out with these RPGs, especially Cyberpunk or Ubisoft, they always come out and tell you that the female version of their character is the canon version.
Mm. Although, I mean, in what's the female version's real name? Because in the male version of Cyberpunk, his real name is Vincent.
I have no idea.
There is a mission when you're searching for, what's her name? And you go to Clouds, and you go to the booth, and she tells you your real name if you're playing as the male character. But I never played the female version.
Yeah. I always played the male versions.
Yeah, same. But yeah, that's going to do it. That's been episode 116. We'll be back next week for episode 117, which is coverage for EGX. Please make sure you check out the website. I have got two reviews dropping this week. Callum's dropping his Sonic DLC, the last one. He said that it's extremely challenging and he's not liking it, but that review will be dropping this week. Alex has got a review up right now, Dragon Quest XI. You got another review coming next week as well, haven't you, Alex? Lies of P.
Yeah, it'll be under the Gamer Dad, but yeah, it's Lies of P, I believe.
Yeah. So there's going to be like 4 or 5 reviews next week. I'm going to try and get some videos up as well. There's just been a lot going on, and I am absolutely swamped with work, so I have no time
for
it.
And I've also been with working with children all week, so I just get to the weekend and I'm knackered.
All right, you've got to do one video, so come on.
Yeah, but it's going to take me a while is the point I'm making.
I mean, you and Laura haven't really done... I mean, Laura's sent me stuff, but I haven't really posted it because it does need work, but... I just don't have the time to do everything. So if you two girls could work together and kind of come up with some content, that would be great because we need more features.
Sounds good. I just need to find the time first.
Anyway, we'll be back next week for episode 117 of EGX coverage. Thank you for following us. Don't forget to check out the website, follow us on all socials, and I will see you next week. We should have some more news on our game next week as well. Fingers crossed.
That's good.
I'll catch you soon. See you later, guys.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. See you later.
Bye. It's the Talking Games Podcast. 1